Yeah, I know it was.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee for this Thursday, January 12th. We have one bill on the agenda and some presentations. It's quite possible we'll be adjourning before 10 a.m. I think this committee does deserve some comp time. So, but before we start, I wanted to say we have a quorum, and we have minutes from our previous meeting from January 10th. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move those particular minutes. Thank you.
The minutes are moved. Is there discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm not sure. I don't have an agenda in my packet. Do we have just not an official agenda? Maybe it's just missing on my packet.
Mr. Chair, we don't have it on our side either.
Okay, let's make sure that was. It's online, apparently.
That's it.
If the committee would like to, we will be getting next week have written agendas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It just helps, especially if there's any information and testifiers.
Okay, now that's a point well taken, and that is our, you know, we're still in that transition back to in person. So we'll take care of that and make sure we have that. Okay, with that, the bill we have, and I hope everyone does have a written copy of the bill, House File 26, and Representative Cagle, Chairperson Cagle.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome, and I believe you have a motion for House File 26.
I would move that House File 26 be recommended to be referred to Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and tell us about your bill.
So House File 26 is the authorization of the increase in funds from the IIJA. So what this bill does, it basically unlocks the federal funding for us. So we say you can spend the money, and then they can go spend the money on road construction. So $315 million, and I don't believe there's a fiscal note.
Okay. I will just take this opportunity to thank you, Chair Cagle, for a lot of hard work you've done really over the last 15 months since the IIJA bill was passed in Congress. You've taken on this issue, and both in terms of writing the provisions in last year's bill, presenting this on the House floor. In the interim, you've done a lot of work and talked to a lot of people. And so I feel like Chair Cagle is kind of our resident expert in the Minnesota House on everything IIJA. And this is going to be one, members, this is going to be one of a number of bills that we have to ensure that our state maximizes this historic federal commitment to infrastructure. And as we'll hear later, or in just a couple of minutes from MnDOT and others, transportation is the lion's share of this bill. We haven't really had a federal initiative on transportation since the Eisenhower years and the interstate highway system investments. And of course, I think this really rivals in 2023 dollars, the type of commitment that we had in the New Deal. So this is truly historic, and I think it's incumbent on us to ensure that Minnesota gets its fair share of this historic investment. So with that, Chair Cagle, are there questions of the author? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a real quick question. Do we know if the state is going to be just taking this money and utilizing it as like, hey, this is what we would spend on our highway system, and now we're going to just spend this? Or are we actually using this as an opportunity to really bolster our infrastructure here in the state by having the regular state allocation with targets as well as the federal money?
Good question. I'll have Chair Cagle respond, and we are going to have MnDOT as well, and I think they can really dig into that question, Representative Olson, but it is really one of the questions of the day, so.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, so this is kind of one of the pieces of the IIJA, and so this is the increase in funding that they gave us through formula. And so, and then the next phase is really the discretionary piece, and that's not being dealt with today here in this. It's just that unlocking that box that allows us to spend this money.
Follow-up, Representative Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, with that, members, if there's no further questions, Chair Cagle, we will start to bring up the a list of the testifiers that we have. And first, we have Sam Brown and Serge Phillips from MnDOT. We have a full panel, so.
Good morning, committee members and chair. I'm Jennifer Witt. I'm with MnDOT's Office of Government Affairs, and I'm just really here to introduce my two experts here. Sam Brown is with our Office of Finance. He is our interim director of the Office of Finance, and then Serge Phillips is our federal relations manager, and they're here to just go through sort of a presentation about IIJA. So, with that, I'll let them take it over.
Mr. Phillips, you're first, it looks like. You're positioning yourself.
Yeah.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Serge Phillips. I'm testifying for MnDOT. I'm the Federal Relations Manager, and I'm here to talk about the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, IIJA, the Surface Transportation Reauthorization. My material are going to cover, first off, an introduction to the Federal Act. Then I'll get right into the dedicated or formula funding for highways, competitive grant funding, increased funding for highways and mass transit, and then finally ending with state funding match and legislative authority. So the history, reauthorization history, is I thought I'd give a little background. U.S. Congress provides federal funding for transportation through more or less five-year reauthorization acts that provide program authorization and funding levels and annual appropriations that provide funding. So this Surface Transportation Act takes years to develop, and it introduces new programs there and funding levels which historically have been observed in appropriations. There's not a battle for those funding levels, and we really appreciate that in transportation because of the planning needed. It takes many years to plan projects, so that is a crucial way that we're funded at the federal level. And the vast majority of federal funding for transportation is for capital construction. The money is federally provided, but it's state administered, and it's paid out through reimbursement. Once work on a project has been done and all the federal requirements have been met, then the federal funding flows to the contractor. And then finally, and that's important for this hearing today, is that federal funding is 80% only. They require a 20% local match, and they call that skin in the game. They want to see local involvement in projects that involve federal money. The previous Surface Transportation Act to IIJA was the FAST Act, Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act, and that was in place from December 15th to 2019, and then it got extended 2 years to November 2021 when IIJA was passed. Now, IIJA's a mouthful. I've heard some people say IJA, but I've always just gone with the acronym. But there's a catchier bipartisan infrastructure bill. You may have heard of it described that way, or bill. And that became law in November of 21. That has been a big accomplishment of President Biden, probably the biggest one to date. People might argue about that, but and it was a bipartisan bill developed in the Senate rather than through the House, House of Transportation Infrastructure, which is often where these bills are developed. But anyway, you know, President Biden used his experience as a senator to get that passed, and we were very grateful. And the new law expands the definition of surface transportation quite a bit. That's why it's called transformative. So it continues to provide core dedicated funding for roads, bridges, mass transit, the way it has been. But it's now expanded the definition of surface transportation to include funding for broadband, ports, water infrastructure, energy and power infrastructure, electric vehicles, and even airports. And it provides first-time formula funding for carbon reduction and climate resiliency, and those are big things. There's also another reason it's transformative is that there's an unprecedented amount in competitive grant funding available, over $100 billion plus. And I'll get into more detail on the discretionary grants. But I thought I'd start with funding on highway funding. Minnesota is scheduled to get $4.8 billion over the 5 years of IIJA. And $3.6 billion is for existing projects, as shown in the STIP. And the STIP is our planning document. It's federally required, and it locks in projects that use federal funding for 4 years. And so it is like a record, and it documents which projects use federal money, and particularly the first 2 years of the STIP, it absolutely shows what projects are going to be done, highway projects. There's $630 million in additional money for the existing programs and $570 million for new programs. The distribution overall between state and local, when I say local, I mean city and county-led projects, is 70% state projects, 30% local. But they also correspond a bit to these programs. I'm on slide 6. So the largest highway formula program is the National Highway System program, NHPP. And that has the biggest amount of formula funding, and those are all state projects. Then there's the Surface Transportation Block Grant Program, STBG. And that one's mostly, or a majority, are local projects, city and county projects. Then there's Highway Safety Improvement Program, HSIP. That's predominantly local projects, too. And then there's the FREIT Program, National Highway Freight Program, NHFP. A lot of acronyms in transportation, but you guys are used to them, right? So those are the formula programs. These are the things that the state asked for in reauthorization so we could continue to fulfill our program, our organized program. So we appreciate our federal partners for passing that bill. And even adding a little extra on top. So the $630 million additional for existing programs, we can tell you after a year of IIJA that there's a definite objective on MnDOT's part to push a lot of this money to local projects. We're trying to do that, again, through the framework of these formula programs that I mentioned. And then for new programs, that's an average of about $115 million a year. A big new program is for bridge investments. So there's a highway program, which includes bridge, but then there's an additional formula bridge program. And that one, there's about $65 million a year. And that reflects the big cost of bridges. Bridges are the most expensive roads. Then EV charging stations, known as NEVI, $13 million, and then carbon reduction and resiliency, $37 million a year. And the bulk of these new programs will be delivered after 23, and the reason for that is we have to develop plans, multi-year plans for how we're going to spend that formula money. That's a federal requirement, and we're still working on those for carbon reduction and resiliency. So turning to pre-existing IIJA competitive grants, and the figures I have here are five-year funding figures, but they're big figures. Infrastructure for Rebuilding America, $14 billion. It's a lot. That program's been around for a while, but the amount has been dramatically increased. And it's not just freight programs. It's intermodal projects and rail grade crossing separation projects. And Minnesota did pretty well in the first round. We got $35 million. The Austin Bridges, that was a MnDOT application. We got $25 million. And US 212, $10 million. And I have 212 as an example. That one and the Moorhead project, which is in the rural program, which I'll get to. These are projects that have been trying through earmarks and through applying for grants for about 10 years. And it's just so competitive for these discretionary grants that in this first year of the IIJA, these are programs with needs that finally got their projects funded. So I think this is the intention of the law's framers and legislators. And these are Minnesota examples of what it's doing for us. Then there's the RAISE grant, Rebuilding American Infrastructure with Sustainability and Equity. That's $7.5 billion over 5 years, and that's surface transportation of local or regional significance. And Minnesota received $99 million in the summer, and these are just a few of them. Duluth Superior Street was the largest award of $25 million. Rochester 6th Street got $19.9 million. And then MnDOT's Bemidji Highway 197 got $18 million. So they're not just highway projects, they're also transit projects that got awards. So then a few more of the big ones, big competitive grant programs are the Bridge Investment Program. And then again, this is in addition to the formula programs. That gets $12.5 billion. That's projects to replace, rehabilitate, and preserve bridges on the National Bridge Inventory. They just announced those, and MnDOT put in for Blatnik Bridge. We didn't get an award for that. That was the Brent Spence Bridge, got $1.6 billion. That's the bridge
Mr.
on the
Phillips,
border.
Mr. Phillips, I that's in my hometown of Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Sorry. But, you know, what's interesting is that you had the president and Mitch McConnell at the ceremony for that one. So, truly bipartisan.
Yeah. But we're hopeful for next year, and another good sign with that, we're seeing good signs in that, is that they did big awards, you know, for just a few projects for that bridge program, and maybe next year they'll look at Minnesota, right, for a big award, because Blatnik's price tag right now is estimated to be about $2 billion, so we need help with that one. Next project are the mega projects, that's $5 billion. That was also awarded with these bridges. They were sort of combined together, so that Brent Spence got some mega money, too. Mega money. Then there's Safe Streets and Roads for All. That's getting $5 billion. And when I say it's the city and county projects, those are the only applicants that are allowed along with tribes. Like, state DOTs can't apply for this program, so it's just intended for local projects, and that's to support local initiatives to prevent death and serious injury on roads. Then there's PROTECT. That's the Promoting Resilient Operations for Transformative, Efficient, and Cost-Saving Transportation. Project details are forthcoming. That one's coming out in the spring, so we're very excited about that one. Our early information we have on that is that many different projects will be eligible. It'll be a pretty broad range. And then finally, rural program. just like it sounds, Rural Surface Transportation Grant Program to improve infrastructure in rural areas to increase connectivity, safety, and reliability. And Moorhead got $26 million for that, and the Moorhead Grade Crossing Project. And like I said, I think that's a good example of how federal funding can step in where state funding levels or there's a need on the state level that we can't meet. Then on slide 11, this is a chart put together, a calendar of competitive grant opportunities. On the left are NOFOs, we describe Notice of Funding Opportunities. That's the key. When that's published in the Federal Register, that says, that gives all the details about who can apply, how you apply, and criteria that are being used to judge your application. And then there's upcoming, and you see the Corridor Identification Development Program, the PROTECT Program, Grant Program, Congestion Relief, and National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Discretionary Program, too. So those are some big ones coming up. And they're already doing and starting a new round of RAISE, the really big discretionary grant program. So we're already looking at projects for that one on the MnDOT level and keeping our eyes and ears open for other projects in the state coming from cities and counties. So now there are a few slides on some of the new programs, starting with the Bridge Program. That's a new $27.5 billion formula-based FHWA Bridge Program with general fund appropriations. 15% per state for bridges off of the federal system, and that's one of the few that's 100% federal share. There are also some tribal projects and some programs that 100% federal funding is allowed. But like I said, for all the rest, it's 80-20. And that's about $300 million for Minnesota over the 5 years. Then there's the new IIJA Climate and Resiliency Programs. These are in the highway category. The Carbon Reduction Program is $107 million over 5 years. That has new formula carbon reduction program to reduce transportation greenhouse gas emissions. And the state is currently developing that carbon reduction strategy within the, we have 2 years to do it. We have to complete it by the end of 23, federal fiscal year 23. So we're in the midst of that. And then there's PROTECT, which is the acronym for the Resiliency Program. That gets $121 million over 5 years. And that's also a national, they also have a national competitive grant program that's going to be released in the next few months. So two ways of getting funding for those new programs and dedicated funding for them means is very important. That means they're probably going to be in the next bill. Who knows what amount, but it's a way for new programs to sort of start to mature. And it's the hallmark of IIJA, these new programs, expanding the definition of transportation. So now I turn to the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program. Minnesota gets approximately $68 million for the years of IIJA. There's a 20% non-federal match, and state legislative spending authorization is required for that. And we are taking requests for qualifications and proposals this spring. Phase one chargers are going to be installed by 24. And charging and fueling infrastructure competitive grants are coming with FHWA guidance expected in the next few months. And it's not just, this is not just a DOT plan. In fact, you know, because it's a utility, there's going to be a lot of private sector involvement. And local governments and tribes are going to be eligible, and to spread out this network, you know, over the whole state is going to require, again, all levels of government cooperation and understanding. So it's start of a really big project. So then there's mass transit funding for Greater Minnesota, and I have information only about Greater Minnesota Transit. The mass transit in cities is, of course, handled by the metropolitan planning organizations, so Met Council and all the cities have to tell you about what they're doing in there. And they, and you know, Met Council has the biggest projects in the state as an MPO because of their transit projects. Our programs, the three big ones for Greater Minnesota are urbanized area, formula grants, rural transit, intercity bus, and bus facilities. And IIJA has provided a significant increase for each of these programs over the next 5 years, using 2021 as a baseline. And the biggest increase was the first year that we just finished, 22. That got a 30% increase. And a lot of that's going to electrification of the fleet, and technology. So there are great things going on in Greater Minnesota Transit. The next slide on the request for increased SRC budget authority, I'm going to defer to my finance colleague and our budget director, Sam Brown.
Perfect. Thank you,
Mr. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, members. My name is Sam Brown. I am the interim budget director at MnDOT. And thank you, Mr. Phillips. This last slide touches on the $315 million in additional state road construction spending authority we need for fiscal year 22-23. This request is in response directly to the IIJA funding that Mr. Phillips has been discussing. And if you're looking at slide 17, to invest in the additional fiscal year 20, federal fiscal year 22 and federal fiscal year 23 IIJA federal funding, MnDOT used existing bond spending authority, and we had to delay some projects. So with the $315 million, we would be able to restore the items listed on this spreadsheet. So $235 million for the trunk highway bonds, and then another additional $80 million for fully approved STIP projects in federal year, or sorry, state fiscal year 23. And I can hand it back to Mr. Phillips if you'd like.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Just a couple slides to end up. First off, the state and local match. This chart shows by program and federal funds roughly we get per year, and then the match required for those projects. So starting with FHWA, as I said, there's 70% of the money roughly is programmed by MnDOT, and 30% roughly is programmed by local government. So the match there per year, right, is $40 million for MnDOT and $20 million for local projects. And then FAA is for aviation. They're asking for $7 million a year. And transit, just the MnDOT portion, $7 million a year. And then for discretionary programs, we're asking for $112 million, which is 2% of the total national amount. And that's, you know, 50 states. These local matches are crucial, and any help you can provide with that would make a big difference, because right now for local projects, the fact of the matter is they often, unless they're really big counties, I got to say they turn to MnDOT and look for MnDOT to provide the funds. So it's a big risk, and so it's not related to this bill, but the appropriations now are starting with earmarks. They started again. They've had them in the last 2 years, and earmarks also add that element of risk. So we need your help with the matching amounts. So in closing, IIJA, carbon reduction, environmental sustainability and resilience, equity and safety are the key themes of the law and what USDOT is focused on for the time of IIJA. And it provides a mix of dedicated funding for existing highway and mass transit programs, as well as competitive funding for both existing programs and new ones. So it's a little bump in money, but it provides many opportunities for new programs and unfunded projects to compete for or to leverage other funding sources, including state sources. So that's my summary of IIJA.
Thank you so much, Mr. Phillips. And we have a number of members that have questions. I'd like to start with Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Phillips, for keeping track of all of this stuff. The bill is a fairly complicated, I shouldn't say the bill, the funding source is complicated with a lot of moving parts, and so I appreciate that. But if I remember the original rollout, the funding isn't necessarily evenly distributed between the years. Some programs require equal funding for each year, and others are heavier in the first year. Are most of these grants that you've applied for, are they over the five-year period, or do they have to be reinitiated every year? Do you have any kind of feel for what where that breakdown is between what is coming up heavy in the first year versus distributed through the 5 years?
Mr. Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That depends program by program. An example is that Mega and the bridge projects, they committed some future years money to that Brent Spence and other projects, but just to that one project. I mean, it seems like USDOT has a lot of latitude to decide which years they spend it in. But on paper, it's supposed to be like a five-year average for programs, but that sometimes gets changed. Also, say the sustainability and the carbon reduction and resiliency programs, because those plans weren't done in 22 and probably won't be done until later in 23, the money for those programs didn't. They're going to stack them in future years, in the last 3 years of the bill. So those are a couple examples of, you know, within the framework, there's some sort of flexibility built in.
Representative Petersburg.
Mr. Chair, if I could just have one follow-up on that and then one additional question, I appreciate that. As a follow-up, is it possible for us to just kind of get a simple spreadsheet on the grants and programs that we have and whether or not they're for the full 5 years or if they're heavily done that way? Nothing fancy or anything, just something simple that we can kind of keep track of. And then the follow-up question is, because of the delay in getting this funding, I had some assurance, at least, that we didn't lose out on any grants or funding from the potential program and funding that the IIJ covered. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Petersburg, we're tracking here. I was also going to ask for that type of spreadsheet. And I think in addition to that, I there's really great information here, and I think this is maybe a little bit more, not a ton of information, but I would love to have some kind of a short write-up of, these different projects you mentioned that we're already supporting, like the one in Moorhead and, what we've already, appropriated or about to appropriate. What are those projects? Where are they? What do they do exactly, right? So something like that would be, I think, very, very helpful to the committee, in addition to what Representative Petersburg mentioned. So thank you for that. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Phillips, Mr. Brown. So some of these may be new member questions. I've got a couple. On slide 17, the $315 million, is that what's related to House File 26? Or is that just being $315 million coincidental?
Chair Hornstein, yes. Members, yes, that is correct. That is related directly to Representative Cagle's House File 26.
So can you explain to me then?
Thank you.
Representative Kraft.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Can you explain to me? So this is, we had to invest some money last year to keep going, and that now we're restoring. I'm not understanding how this, I'm not making the connection to how it works, so please.
It's a sure. Cash flow, perhaps. Yeah.
I don't get it, sorry.
Yeah. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, Representative. As part of the, when we receive the federal funds, we have to also receive state authority to spend those funds. And that comes as part of our state road construction appropriation. Session ended last year without receiving that appropriation increase. to account for the IIJA funds. So what we are back here now asking for is that actual authority to spend the IIJA funds and increase our SRC appropriation.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kraft.
So we spent this money last year, and now we're going to backfill it?
Chair Hornstein, Representative, correct. It's largely we shifted some projects using our trunk highway bond authority largely, and now this is to backfill that. Without that authority, we're largely kicking the can down the road, though. There's only so much funding we would have option to kind of shift.
Okay. Proceed. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on that, very helpful. I have a different question on the carbon reduction program, which is on page 8, it's mentioned as $37 million. And then on page, later on, I can't find, on page 13, it's talked about as $107 million over 5 years. Can you explain the difference there? And then also, does this money start flowing only after we complete the plan, or does it start before that?
Yes. The $37 million is an estimate of per year for both those programs. The other ones are five-year totals, an average. One of them's around 20 a year, and the other one's a little bit under, so that's where this 37 comes in. And yes, we haven't gotten any of this funding yet because we have to do the funding is for projects, and the projects are in this plan that we're still working on. So the plan will identify the projects that will receive the funding. So that's we're gonna still get the full amount, but it's gonna be in the last 3 years of the bill.
Representative Kraft, thank you for that series of excellent questions, and I think one of the reasons why this bill is before us now, so early in session, is that it's imperative that this money be appropriated not only for the backfilling purposes you said, but we'll hear later that, you know, there's a construction season coming up, and we were very intentional about moving this bill the first week of session so that we can get that going. But we'll hear more from some interested parties about that. Next, we have Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A quick question on page 10 on the local projects. Will those be administered through MnDOT, through the regional metropolitan planning organizations? What will be the application process for local governments to access the Safe Streets and Roads funding pool? It's the third bullet.
That's a good MnDOT question. It depends on the project. All the money flows through MnDOT, so when I say it's administered, there's that sense, but then there's also the project administration, which might not be, we might not administer the project. That could be locally led. In fact, for these applications, there's always some discussion. So some of them, they're joint efforts. Some of them, they apply, but MnDOT is the administrator, and other ones, they apply and they're the administrator. So there are all specific situations. Interestingly, FHWA has made some, they really want to encourage more local projects to apply. So they have said it that they are interested in maybe administering it. So instead of state, FHWA might, but as a practical matter, that might not come. They have to have staff and there's training. So I don't see that happening before a year or two away. But that would be an interesting development if they were also a potential administrator.
Yeah. Representative Elkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So will any of it go through the MPOs? This particular pot?
I think it would go, for grants, they would go to the applicant. So if an MPO applies, it would go to them. But it can also be a city or county.
I'm sorry, not making myself clear. So will there be programs where a city or county would apply through their MPO?
Yes, they could do it that way, yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So not really a question, just kind of a comment to the entire committee here regarding the electric vehicle infrastructure program and the grants. I just want to make sure that everyone in the committee is aware. I haven't done a survey of my new district, but my old district included hundreds of square, it was a couple hundred square miles, and had three charging stations. So there were three electric vehicle charging stations in my couple hundred square mile rural district, whereas I'm sure many of the metro individuals have dozens and dozens of charging stations. So as we're talking about electrification of the state of Minnesota, we're talking about using taxpayer dollars. Understand that I had three. Blue Earth had one, Fairmont had one, and Sherburne had a Tesla supercharging station. But otherwise, that was all we had in the form of availability with regard to electric power charging. But then also when we're talking about these grants, in rural Minnesota, we live life a little bit differently, and as a result, things cost a little bit different amounts of money. We talked with Blue Earth Light and Water, their utility power company, was looking at putting in a electric charging station, and they were going to pay for a lot of it, and they had actually won a grant to put in this charger. And they told me, they said, you know, Representative Olson, it's a $20,000 project if we do it with all the red tape that the federal government and the state is requiring us to do it by. And that match portion that the power utility company had to put in was $7,500. So a $20,000 project, they would have to put in $7,500. That means taxpayer dollars, $12,500 is coming from somewhere else, which is fine. And he told me, he says, Rep. Olson, we can do it ourselves for $5,000. And so they saved themselves $2,500 by just forgetting about the grant. They saved the Minnesota and the country taxpayers $12,500, and they saved themselves $2,500 by doing it themselves. So as we're looking at these grants, understand that we can do things differently if we cut some tape, if we make things easier, and we can do it more efficiently, because I would argue most vehemently that four power charging stations for the price of one is always a good deal. Whether you like electric vehicles or not, four for the price of one is awesome. So just some comments that I have when we're talking about this, because I know that the future of this state is looking towards that direction, and we can't forget about the people who don't have access to these things. There are people in the Twin Cities who don't have access. There are also people in rural Minnesota who don't have access.
Thank you for that. I don't know if anyone from MnDOT would like to comment or respond. You don't, not required, but
hopefully, the goal hopefully is to reach all parts of the state so that people, you know, driving will have that system in place. We're at the beginning, so.
Thank you for that comment. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Brown, Mr. Phillips. My question is, what percentage of the charging stations are state funded? And as far as numbers, I mean, is it 10% of all of them?
MnDOT representative to respond?
Chair Hordenstein, representative, you know, I would have to get back specifically on I guess my follow-up question, representative, is, are you talking public?
Representative Murphy.
Yeah, just all of them. I mean, in our area, we have so many, so I know there's charging stations. Does the state get involved in all of them as far as grant money?
Yeah. Chair Hornstein, representative, can I follow up with you on that question? If it is any, it's a very small percentage, but I don't have that off.
I think it's a great question, Representative Murphy, and I think you all are busy, and I don't want to give you more work, but I think maybe a very quick, one pager or something, charging station finance 101. And your correspondence with Representative Murphy, maybe we could have the whole committee, I think, would benefit from that.
Absolutely, Chair Hornstein. And thank you for the question.
Thank you for the question.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in some of my research, it seems like most of the charging stations that the state owns are in public facilities. So like in our state office building, MnDOT does not want to be owners or operators of charging stations.
Yeah, thank you, Joe Kegel. That came up quite a bit last year. Now Senator Barr, who was Representative Barr and on this committee, was very interested in ensuring that boundary between public and private was clear. So that's a appreciate that reminder and that point, Chair Kegel. Okay, we have Representative Sensenmira.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you to our presenters from MnDOT. My question is around the Vision Zero projects. Can you just give some examples of kind of what those local initiatives are? And yeah, just a little more explanation about that. Thank you.
Yes. In Minnesota, we call it Towards Zero Deaths. This funding is valuable because it's flexible. It's not just for capital construction like, you know, engineering for roads. It includes things like youth outreach. Maybe it can be talking, reaching youth through talking to them, having people go out in the community. Or it can be through use of social media, you know, reaching youth to talk to them about traffic safety. There's the Toward Zero Deaths annual conference. If you ever get a chance, go, because that, along with DPS, MnDOT is involved with that, and there are some just harrowing videos that they show there that they teach you a lot. I know I've learned from them on many aspects of driving, and particularly, you know, when you, I use the example of youth education. Those are some examples of what the money would go to. But this is each community, you know, this is driven by communities, and they best know what's the type of issues that they're seeing with traffic safety on their, in their community, on their roads.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Chair Kegel.
I think the thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one of the best examples of what this funding could have been used for is I know a lot of you guys who are on the committee have heard me complain about University Avenue and the dangers along that stretch. And in recent years, we've been able to upgrade lighting at intersections, which has made a big difference with the pedestrian vehicle fatalities and accidents. MnDOT has also come in and done bump outs at the bus stops. I have plenty of pictures of the benches on University Avenue being completely buried in snow and people standing on the side of the road. And so, you know, when I think about the kind of projects that this Vision Zero could fund, would be something similar to that. And that was completely community led. We had cities all up and down the University Avenue corridor working together, talking about strategies. We had the police department came in and did education patrols along the along the corridor, and so it's been a great project. We still have a lot more to do on that stretch, but maybe we can encourage some of our community folks to apply for this grant.
Excellent. Are there any other additional committee questions or comments before our MnDOT representatives move on? Representative Sensenmira.
Yeah, I did. Thank you, Chair. And I just wanted to ask a follow-up for that, and this might be a new person question that doesn't totally make sense, but is there any way that funding could ever be used for plowing of bus stops or things like that? Because I know that in my district, that's a huge safety issue. And my city is just kind of having a conversation about what, you know, municipal shoveling could look like and how we, you know, make places where we know people are standing, know people are walking in the city safer from snow and snowbanks. Thank you.
I'd have to look that one up in the notice of funding as which criteria. I know sometimes if it's plowing, that can be seen as maintenance, but that's why I'd like to check the notice of funding and then get back to you. Would that be okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you. Before we move on to public testimony, I did have one final question here directed to our MnDOT representatives. Moving forward, you know, and this bill is still before us, and I hope it'll be
passed today over to Ways and Means, but after today, what needs to happen and when legislatively this session for the state of Minnesota to maximize our IIJA matching capability? What needs to happen? What would you expect from the legislature after today?
Budget authority, the $315 million in budget authority, and then the matching funds are going to be key for us to maximize the funding leverage in the bill.
Okay. And is there a timing between now and May that is needed to expedite that?
Well, the authorization of the 315 is sooner the better.
Well, no, because beyond that, you know, this is for one particular pot of money, but there's others that you outlined today.
Chair Hornstein, members, yes, I think Mr. Phillips covered that. The 315, that is definitely the priority in the immediate future. Going forward, we are working closely with the governor's office and in putting together the governor's recommendation and how that incorporates both the future budget authority. So we're backfilling 22-23, but we're also going to need future budget authority going into the future biennia, as well as matching funds. So for timeline, I wouldn't say it's a, you know, the 315 is definitely the priority right now to get that. But as we move through session, of course, you know, the more we know, the more we can plan for. And looking forward to working closely with this committee on the, kind of that time frame.
Right. And we want to continue to partner with you. And again, we believe there'll be some future deliberations here in this committee on this topic. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would reiterate, the sooner we can get those dollar amounts that would be necessary for budgeting and timing, the better for us as well. Thank you.
I think we're on the same page on that, Representative Petersburg. Thank you very much for your presentation, for your work on this. You know, we look forward to continued engagement with MnDOT on IIJA.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So, members, we have several additional testifiers now from the public. I'd like to first call on Margaret Donahoe from the Transportation Alliance.
And, Mr. Chair, while she's making her way up there, maybe just to kind of piggyback on what Representative Petersburg asked, I think for the locals, it's local units of government and partners that we're working with that need that federal or that match money. It's probably a little bit more urgent for them than MnDOT, because that money would really help them plan their projects. And so I'm hoping that we can get that assistance out to the locals as soon as possible.
And corollary to that, Representative Petersburg, is that Chair Cagle's also taken on and working very hard, you know, with locals to identify ways in which they can. A lot of local municipalities, particularly smaller towns, don't have staffing capacity and technical expertise to, you know, write the grants that are necessary to access this money. So this local technical assistance is something that is hugely important, and we'll probably have a whole hearing about that, or part of a hearing, where we get representatives from some of these smaller communities and even larger communities that don't have the expertise, because it's a very, very involved process to access the federal money for local communities. So with that, welcome to the committee, Ms. Donahoe. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a handout, if I could get this distributed.
We have pages that can provide that to the committee.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And for those of you who may not be familiar with us, the Transportation Alliance is a statewide coalition of organizations, both public sector and private sector, that are involved in planning, designing, constructing, and operating Minnesota's transportation system. Our members include local governments, labor unions, contractors, suppliers, consulting engineer firms, transit systems, and other businesses. On behalf of the members of the Transportation Alliance, I would like to thank Representative Cagle for carrying this important legislation to finally provide the budget authority for MnDOT to spend federal highway dollars. And I won't go through the handout piece by piece, but just to highlight a few things that we think are important for your consideration as you move through the session. First, while we really, really appreciate the IIJA, and it is a very big piece of legislation, it certainly will not take care of Minnesota's transportation problems. We continue to have a huge funding shortfall for highways, for transit, for all modes of transportation. And we know that as MnDOT works to update the 20-year highway investment plan, known as MnSHIP, the estimated 20-year funding gap just for state highways is about $19 to $27 billion over the next 20 years, an amount that's higher than the previous funding gap in the last 20-year highway investment plan. And that includes taking into consideration the IIJA. So we continue to have a huge need for ongoing dedicated funding for transportation. Also, you can see on this handout, we also just wanted to point out that while the IIJA is certainly historic in many ways, it's basically the usual five-year Surface Transportation Authorization Act that's kind of been supersized. So it has a lot more in it than Congress usually includes in a Surface Transportation Authorization Act, like energy, water, broadband, cybersecurity, things that are not traditionally included. And it is a significant increase in funding. This is the usual authorization act that Congress passes. The previous one was called the FAST Act, as you heard. And when this expires in federal fiscal year 2026, Congress will pass another Surface Transportation Authorization Act. So the need for matching money will not go away with the IIJA. It is not a one-time need. We've always needed matching money for federal dollars. We'll continue to need that in the future. And chances are very good that the higher level of funding that has been provided under the IIJA will continue in the next Surface Transportation Authorization Act, along with these discretionary grant programs. Also, just want to point out, as you heard in the last committee hearing, dedicated revenue sources into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund are down compared to the February forecast, and that is having an impact on local governments. So we anticipate that there will be a 4% cut on average for counties and cities in their state aid out of the Highway Trust Fund for 2023 versus 2022. So that's a very real reduction in funding for local governments as they're trying to take care of local roads and bridges, and the IIJA money is not distributed directly to local governments, so that will not change that reduction in funding that they will be experiencing. The other thing I think is important to remember, because this is another surface transportation reauthorization, the money that gets talked about, the $4.8 billion, is not new money. And that's what we're trying to point out in this chart that you see on here, is there's sort of a base level of funding, and then there's the increase in funding. So the increase is more like $925 million over 5 years for highways and $212 million for transit. So we would really like to urge you to provide stable, dedicated, ongoing funding for both the state and local governments to both match formula funds and compete for discretionary grant programs. Because increases in revenue into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund and the Transit Assistance Account will position Minnesota to access and efficiently spend federal and state dollars to improve the safety and quality of our transportation system while creating more career opportunities and improving our state's economy. Other states are moving ahead. Last year, in addition to authorizing spending of additional highway dollars, for instance, in Washington, Governor Inslee signed a nearly $17 billion 16-year transportation revenue package. In Michigan, a bipartisan package called the Building Michigan Together Plan includes critical investments of $645 million in Michigan's infrastructure. While in Massachusetts, Governor Charlie Baker signed an $11.4 billion infrastructure bond bill known as MassTrack, authorizing investments in roads, bridges, railways, transit, and environmental infrastructure that also includes additional federal formula funds and the opportunity to compete for discretionary federal grants. So in closing, you have an opportunity this session to provide increased, stable, dedicated revenue that will both allow the state and local governments to match federal funds, but also to reduce the funding gap that continues to grow for all of the modes of transportation in our state. So thank you.
And thank you very much. And I just wanted to express my appreciation for the work that the Transportation Alliance has done on, you know, a number of both last session and over the summer. You held some workshops that many people in the public and legislators participated in to sort of brief us on this from your perspective, and I found that very valuable. And I'm glad that you mentioned the fact that there are shortfalls in some of our basic transportation funding sources, such as the Highway User Trust Distribution Fund and the Motor Vehicle Sales Tax. Members, we're going to hear a lot more about this on Tuesday. MnDOT is going to come in, and you know, it's really important for us on the Transportation Committee to understand what Ms. Donahoe was talking about, because while there's a lot of play around the budget surplus in the general fund, the transportation dedicated funds are not doing well. And so, you know, we're kind of in a different spot than maybe some of our other colleagues on various committees that are looking at general fund money. We tend to not have a lot of general fund money in this committee. And so, you know, we have a challenge, and we'll hear a lot more about that on Tuesday. So so thank you for mentioning that. And obviously members of the public will be can weigh in as well if they want to on Tuesday related to this. And so this is going to be an ongoing conversation. So thank you very much. And this is us, Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, just really briefly, is it possible to get an electronic copy of this? Yes. I'd also like that of the MnDOT's presentation as well.
Okay, great. Anyone else? Thank you. And thanks for the...
Mr. Chair.
Great. Representative Murphy.
Thank you. I'm just wondering what's your 20-year projection when you talked about 20 years. What's the inflation factor on that?
Oh, Mr. Chair, Representative, I'd have to double check with MnDOT. We do know that highway construction inflation is running a lot higher. I think previously 5% inflation was kind of typical for the construction cost index. It's more like anywhere from 8 to 13%. It has really gone up, but I'm not sure exactly how they're calculating their numbers. They haven't finalized the MnSHIP plan yet.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Great.
Just real quick.
Oh, Representative Elkins. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Just, you know, building on that, you know, our highway construction, you know, industry has, you know, finite capacity, and they don't expand their finite capacity unless they can foresee a consistent stream of funding. So when we suddenly and, you know, unexpectedly or on an ad hoc basis keep putting these, infusions of one-time money into the system, a big part of the impact is that we just raise the price of our projects because you've got a larger pot of money, competing for this, you know, relatively fixed pool of construction capacity. One of the reasons why it's really important for us to create an ongoing steady stream to provide the industry the incentive to staff up to be able to build a larger volume of projects.
It's a point well taken, and we've heard that from many of the transportation
construction industry, that stable, dedicated, reliable, long-term source. We really have not, we've been really, over the last 15 years, going from sort of biennium just not doing, I think, what's necessary. And these projects don't go away. They just get more expensive. And so, and the needs grow. And so we'll be looking at some of the need issues as well on Tuesday when MnDOT comes in. Representative Murphy, did you want to follow up?
Yeah, follow up to Representative Elkins. Yeah. In the broadband industry, that's a real problem that they have. You know, if they have all the money at one time, they're just not able to spend it wisely. Where if they had it stretched out over a period of time, it just makes a lot more sense for them.
Yeah. Thank you. Point well taken. You've surfaced some very important issues that it's good that we're starting to talk about them early in session. So thank you again for your testimony. All right, John Pollard, Mr. John Pollard, no stranger to legislative deliberations. Good to see you again. Welcome to the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Pollard. I am the Legislative Director for the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 49. We represent 14,500 members in Minnesota, North, and South Dakota, making us one of the largest construction trade unions in the state. Our members are the operators of heavy equipment on both public and private construction sites, ranging from roads to bridges like we're talking about today, residential and commercial construction, and energy projects across the state. If you drive by a road or bridge project and you see a crane or a bulldozer, it's likely that the operator of that machine is a member of Local 49. Thank you for the opportunity to speak briefly about House File 26. Thank you to Chair Cagle for authoring the bill, and thank you to the committee for hearing it so quickly in session, given the timing of the issue. Since Ms. Donahoe already touched on the needs, I will forego that piece of legislation and you're going to hear about it more on Tuesday. But though the investments made by the federal IIJA bill help close these gaps and do the projects that are all in your districts, equally as important as the investment in that critical infrastructure, these resources are investments in Minnesota families. On a comprehensive scale, construction is a $16 billion industry in Minnesota and supports more than 130,000 jobs. They are good-paying, family-supporting jobs for workers such as members of Local 49. They provide livable wages, health care, and benefits to those who work them. With that, I will keep my comments short. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Pollard. We really appreciate all of your engagement in transportation issues over so many years. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. If you know, at this point, I've toured pretty much all of the building trades training facilities. But if you get the opportunity to go up to Hinckley and see their training facility, that is the best one of all because they let you play with the toys. So reach out to this guy and arrange to get a tour.
Okay. Anyone else?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have John Thorson from the Laborers International Union. Also no stranger to legislative deliberations. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Thorson. I'm Legislative Director for LIUNA Minnesota, North Dakota. We're Minnesota's infrastructure union representing more than 14,000 skilled construction laborers who build and maintain the roads, highways, bridges, transit, and critical utilities that allow our communities to thrive. I'm here today to support House File 26, a bill appropriating $315 million necessary to both unlock the federal funds available through the IIJA, and also to position us better for going after discretionary funds through IIJA. I too will not focus or admiring the need and focus my comments on two pieces. One, the resources available in House File 26 will make Minnesotans safer, boost our economy, and create family-supporting construction careers. We're very excited about the career and economic inclusion opportunities this will bring to Minnesota's construction industry through registered apprenticeship programs that increase participation of women, people of color, veterans, and others that are not participating to their full potential in our economy. We also know that a union card and the prevailing wage has been and will always be a ticket to the middle class. You might not get rich, but you can provide for your family, have good health care that you can count on, and retire with dignity. The socioeconomic impacts of a career that pays middle class wages, provides comprehensive family health care and retirement benefits, and offers opportunities for career-long training and advancement can exceed those created by lower wage, no benefit job by a factor of five or more. The other piece I'd like to focus on is the discretionary grants. Federal agencies give preference to grant applicants who provide a plan to comply with federal labor and employment law, which includes use of a skilled workforce, for example, through registered apprenticeships, taking steps to prevent misclassification of workers, paying prevailing wages and benefits to workers, and using project labor agreements, local hire provisions, and commitment to union neutrality. Our experience throughout the nation is a partnership with unions can improve an applicant's score and to win money for communities. LIUNA has experience working with municipalities, developers, utilities on IIJA grant proposals, and we can help applicants through the process from letters of support to assisting stakeholders with compliance and implementation of apprenticeships, requirements, and other labor standards. So I'd like to thank Chair Cagle for bringing forward House File 26. It'll provide investments that we can count on to make life better for millions of Minnesotans, create and maintain thousands of good-paying union jobs, and fuel economic growth in every corner of our state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions of Mr. Thorson? Okay. Thank you for your testimony and your work. Okay. Next, we have Laura Ziegler from the Associated General Contractors. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Laura Ziegler with Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. Since this is my first time in front of the committee, just a little bit about AGC. We do tout ourselves. We are the state's oldest and largest construction trade association with over 400 members statewide. And our members build the public infrastructure, the private infrastructure all over the state and, quite frankly, the country. They build roads, bridges, transit, sewer, water systems, airports, our transit systems, and more. And in addition to our transportation contractors, we also represent commercial building contractors, which we know transportation has a direct impact on those developments as well. We have vital partnerships with the state, particularly the Minnesota Department of Transportation, as well as the trades, to deliver and complete projects that are key to our economic and community vitality. I'm also here today as part of the Transportation Advocacy Coalition. We are composed of business and labor groups dedicated to finding short and long-term solutions to fund our state's transportation infrastructure. We do have a one-pager that lists those solutions for you in your packet today. Again, I just want to reiterate our thanks to Representative Cagle for authoring the bill and for you all hearing it so early in session. And our ask here today is for you to act now and as soon as possible to allow MnDOT to spend these funds that they have allocated as matching dollars. As you've heard, the sooner the authorization is given, the better position the department is in to plan, fund, and execute projects for this upcoming construction season. And as you would expect, this directly impacts construction businesses and their ability to plan and make investments in their capital and plan for their workforce and the bids that they're going to put in. As you've already heard, construction inflation continues to go up. It is putting stress on some of these funding sources. So the sooner the better in terms of appropriating these funds and the better value to the state that has already been mentioned. One other final note, EGC, we conduct an annual survey, and certainly there are challenges in the economy, but one of the bright spots was highway, road, and bridge work. And so we have just a little footnote in Minnesota because we didn't get these matching funds across the finish line, so I think this would certainly bolster that optimism in the construction industry as well. So this bill is a much-needed start, and we're urging early passage, and thanks again. I'll be around for any questions.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your longstanding work in the transportation arena and involvement with this committee. Okay, next up, Brian McDaniel. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian McDaniel, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association. MAPA was first incorporated in 1942 and represents asphalt producers, contractors, and associate members who support the asphalt industry. Thank you very much for the ability to testify today. I promise to be brief. But we wish to, MAPA members wish to support Representative Cagle's bill, House File 26, which is providing substantial funds from the Trunk Highway Fund for the purposes of the IIJA. MnDOT has traditionally had a very strong cash position because of our constitutionally dedicated funds. And for this reason, they've been able to withstand a certain degree of uncertainty with fund authorizations. However, we know that the longer it takes to fund these projects, the closer we'll come to having to shelve them, and that these projects that could be improving our roads and providing jobs. We appreciate the committee's willingness to move House File 26 so quickly so that our members can be providing projects to the state of Minnesota this construction season. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to stick around for any questions.
Thank you so much for your testimony and your work in the transportation arena as well.
Thank you.
And so we'll end with a couple of really great folks who have been involved in, with transportation for many, many years that I've enjoyed working with. Jason Dunnick has joined us. And then we'll also have, that's it. Okay, great. Wondering if any other Dunnicks wanted to test it. Oh, okay. Let's we can have a whole Dunnick panel here.
Mr. Chair, members of the council, I just want to say I'm the older, better-looking Dunnick.
Welcome to the committee, and that's on the record now. Please state your name for the record.
Jason Dunnick, Dunnick Incorporated. I was asked by Mr. Chair Hornstein to testify this morning, and I came here not prepared, so I'll do my best. I come here representing the industry, but also Dunnick Incorporated, which is a family-owned business in the asphalt business since 1926. We're almost 100 years old. It's imperative that you give the authority to move this forward. MnDOT said that they need the authority to make blueprints. If you would have gave the authority this past year, we would have been building those roads today. And it's so important that we get that going. We stand as a group of contractors, asphalt or concrete, ready to, we have the capacity, and we are ready to move on your roads. And so I encourage you to move this forward as soon as you can. I hope it could be done in the next 2 weeks because it's that important to get this done. If we don't move this forward quickly, we will miss another construction season. And those are jobs for people. That's safety for people on our roads. And it's smooth roads for everybody. So thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the council. I stand for questions.
Thank you very much. And again, appreciate your testimony on short notice. Sometimes it's that short notice testimony that can be the best, so we appreciate it. Any questions? Great. And Mr. Dunnick? Another, Mr. Dunnick, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Adam Dunnick, Director of Government Affairs for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. Great pleasure to be here at the committee. I wasn't certain if I was going to testify this morning either until Representative Elkins held up the 49ers as the best training center.
I know. Myunis is pretty good, too, by the way.
Mr. Chair, I noticed he waited till Representative Mike Nelson was out of the room to make that allegation. So I'm here to contest it a little bit and say that we're right up there with him. But no, in seriousness, my colleagues from the other building trades unions covered a lot of what I would say. We're certainly a proud part of the labor management partnership with the AGC and the state chamber, pushing for both the appropriation today with House File 26, as well as looking at transportation needs long term. The arguments have been made here. The thing I would just add to it is we in the billing trades have made significant investments in our apprenticeship programs, even more so in the last decades. And so in terms of the dollars spent, the state billing trade spends over $50 million annually, largely with almost no public subsidy or support. We at the Carpenters spend over $20 million annually in the upper Midwest six states region that we represent. We train thousands of people every year. Right now in our training program, we have over 2,100 apprentices across six states. And they're up and moving, but there's capacity for more. Like I like to tell people, we have the infrastructure to build our infrastructure. And so we strongly support this bill, and we'll be before the committee supporting other opportunities to rebuild our state's roads, bridges, transit, and other much-needed infrastructure improvements. So happy to be here, and thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. We have a question from Vice Chair Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is actually a question for Mr. Jason Dunnick. So as we're looking at future funding and things and your deep expertise in getting projects done and that kind of thing, as Minnesota's kind of bounced, we've had dedicated funding but not enough to get things done and been backfilling with one-time money over time, not having enough dedicated money to get projects done and then having big influxes of projects like we're having right now, how does that affect your ability to staff up and be where you need to be in order to get the best consistent like pricing and ability to get projects done for the state? So as we're looking forward, we need to figure out how we're doing this. And just could you give us a characterization of what kind of impact that has on your business and ability to get things done?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the question. That's a great question because, first of all, everybody is at the same point on finding people, right? And so when you don't have the consistent money coming in, you're always struggling to say, okay, do we have enough capacity with our people to find people? And then the other issue is it just really helps us when we're going out and trying to procure equipment and other things like gravel pits and things like that. Having a consistent flow from you or the state would help us immensely. But I would say that with our industry, the construction industry, does have room in our capacity to bring these jobs home for the state.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and we appreciate, again, your family's work in the transportation arena. We have one more testifier from the public. We only have a few minutes left in our committee time, so I'll bring up Mr. Graves, and then we'll vote on this bill. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Graves. Please state your name for the record officially and proceed with your brief testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We represent more than 6,000 employers across the state, in every corner of the state, every industry of the state. But we also represent a large cohort of local chamber partners as well, again, spread out across the state. Our members, employers, and businesses rely on a safe, reliable, efficient, multimodal system of transportation to get their goods to market and to get their employees and their customers to their door. And so we, like many, were eagerly anticipating the opportunity to work with the legislature to maximize and leverage the significant investment made by IIJA in our transportation infrastructure. We were, however, like many, disappointed that none of this got across the finish line last year. And in particular, that uh, that this this first tranche of money has been sitting at MnDOT for some time waiting for this obligation. So we very much appreciate the quick work by Chair Cagle and Chair Hornstein and others to bring this forward so that MnDOT can use this money. As you heard, there's significant need, and there's a great opportunity to put this money to work right away, particularly given the short construction season that we have. So we very much appreciate, again, the quick action on this. And we look forward to working with our partners. As we mentioned earlier, we also are part of this the Transportation Advocacy Coalition. I look forward to working with them and our partners in labor in the industry and working with you all to continue to move forward on drawing on finding matching dollars to draw on additional funding and to make those investments that are necessary to move our transportation system forward in the years ahead. So, again, thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify. Thank you for the quick work here today. Thank you for support for this.
Thank you so much, Mr. Graves, and I appreciated our opportunity to meet with you, or my opportunity to meet with your Transportation Committee last month. It was a great meeting and look forward to our continued partnership. Representative Cagle, Chair Cagle, any quick final thoughts before we vote?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is just the first phase of IIJA, so there's a lot more to come. Stay tuned. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File Number 26 goes to Ways and Means.
Okay. Chair Cagle renews her motion that House File 26 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you very much. You're on your way to Ways and Means. A couple quick announcements before we head out. I wanted to give you a preview for next week, members. So on Tuesday, we'll hear from MnDOT a little bit more about their current financial state. We'll also get an initial overview from the Metropolitan Council also on Tuesday. We have a number of bills that we're looking at hearing next week on Thursday, but they're at various stages of what one needs a fiscal note. One has an author may not be able to make it that day, but you know, but here just to give you a sense of what's coming either on Thursday or the following week. Representative Frazier has House File 282. That's another one that relates to identifications and IDs, racial and ethnic indications. Representative Elkins has House File 195, which deals with commuter funding for a transportation organization. House File 235, Representative Keeler, Indian employment preference. And then we also have a bill that I hope will be ready for us next Thursday. I will be introducing it the next time we have bill introductions. And that's, we call this sort of, it's a, last year we had a conference committee on the transportation bill. Representative Petersburg and I and Representative Cagle were on that committee. I believe Representative Elkins as well. We had a number of policy provisions that were agreed to with the Senate. These were a lot of agency initiatives. There were some other initiatives as well that members had brought up. But those were all kind of agreed to in the conference committee. But since we didn't have a bill last year, we want to get that off of the, you know, just moving around. There's not a lot of controversy here, but again, just getting this bill done early will free us up to do more things so we don't have to pass a big, thick bill at the end. So, you know, maybe we call this a mini transportation policy omnibus, whatever. But I know several members of the committee are very familiar with it. It'll be posted. Obviously, we'll give enough time. This will need a fiscal note as well that may not be ready. So unlikely we'll do this Thursday, but it would also be coming in the next couple of weeks. I wanted to give everyone a heads up about that. Are there any other questions or concerns? I want to also, just before we leave for the long weekend, we had a great and productive week, and I just appreciate all of the members' contributions. This is really a great committee, both sides of the aisle, and appreciate your work. I really appreciate the staff's work. A lot of things coming at the staff very quickly this week, and We want to thank everybody, both partisan and nonpartisan staff. So with that, we stand adjourned. Have a good long weekend, and we will see you Tuesday here at 8:30.